Wow, new technology.
Hello.
Try and get a new thing for this video thing for you Patreons. All.
Stop.
Patreon, maybe.
We love you. We love you. And thank you so much for your support. I know it's been a long time between drinks, as we say down here in Australia.
Yep.
The place that time forgot.
Madness.
Happy election time. Next month we have our federal election.
Yep.
And we're not going to say anything else about that because this is not an election podcast. It is a history podcast.
Very true. Very true. So we'll move on to the next bit where we start recording the actual podcast.
Yes.
It's been a while. Again, we're sorry.
Tumbleweeds.
We're sorry.
We're sorry. We are bad podcasters.
Yeah.
We're bad.
Yeah. Crazy madness and shenanigans.
Yeah.
Really. There's just.
I know we said we'd do one every month. Well,
you said we'd do it every month.
I said we'd do it every fortnight.
I said we'd do it as often as we could.
No. No. Okay. All right. After this, okay, we are
still endeavoring to get back into a steady routine that will involve regular researching and recording for podcasts.
Yes.
Trying very, very, very hard.
It's crazy. I don't know what it is. I mean, we can't even blame COVID anymore.
No. No, I think it's just.
We can't blame COVID. We can't blame anything.
I don't think we're alone in coming out this other side of this pandemic back into the new normal. That readjusting is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And,
Yep. I think we're all just really over it and we're really tired. And that's no excuse, but.
And we understand that.
At all.
For anyone out there who is having issues, having troubles, we fully support you. We're on your side and we certainly mm-hmm. understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's just adjusting to everything and, getting our workloads organized as well.
Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff happening off to outside of podcast land. Podcast land.
But yeah, we are endeavoring to fix this situation.
Indeed, we are. So I think on that note, we should stop waffling.
And also, happy Easter.
Happy Easter for anyone that listens to this nice and properly. Yeah. We are recording this on Easter Sunday.
And I've eaten way too many eggs. Mm. And all I've had today is cups of tea and hot cross buns.
Which is perfectly acceptable for Easter Sunday. Okay.
This is my new friend. This is him. This is Egbert.
Yes. Of course. If you want to see Egbert, you need to subscribe to our Patreon to see the video of this.
Oh, crazy. Crazy.
If you are so inclined. And we'd appreciate it, but,
it's completely up to you guys.
We get it.
We are flying by the seats of our pants here at the moment. And we do have a couple of new podcasts. New subjects mm-hmm. for our podcast.
Well, how about we pause so I can insert the theme song and let that car you probably heard go away.
Yes.
What the?
Hello and welcome back to What the History. Yes, we made it back. And we are ready for more bizarre bits of history. I'm Trevor Holland, and I'm joined, as always, by my gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous co-host, partner, and beautiful wife.
You're so kind. Thank you. I'm Susie Holland, obviously. And that's really sweet of you. Thank you for calling me beautiful.
You are beautiful.
After all this time. 25 years the other day. Thank you, guys.
Yes, that is right. We should have put that in the waffle. Yes.
We should have put that in the waffle, but we forgot.
Oh, wow.
Because we're just so excited to get back and do a What the History. It's been 4 months.
Shh, let's not talk about that.
Well, it's the truth, though. It has been 4 months, and we're really sorry. Life has gotten away from us. Joining into this new normal that we call post-COVID. And COVID is still hanging around. Look, I know. I'm telling other people.
The waffle. Everyone hears the waffle.
Okay.
We're going to
post-COVID. We're getting back into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your bizarre history, my love?
Okay. Get a martini in your hand. Bring it on. When you think of the Prohibition era in US histories, what do you think of? Is it gangsters such as Al Capone, Bugsy Siegel, and Dion O'Banion with their cars and guns, which were pretty cool? The cars, not so much the guns. Is it films like The Public Enemy with Jimmy Cagney and Gene Harlow, which was actually made during Prohibition? Little fact in there. The Untouchables with Kevin Costner or Road to Perdition with Tom Hanks? Is it the speakeasies with booze being swilled by gorgeous women and dapper men? What about Izzy and Mo? Who, I hear you ask. Well, sit back with your martini and your drink of choice, and I will tell you about this pair of Prohibition agents that you might not have heard of. But first, a little background into this time in US history. Prohibition lasted from 1920 to 1933 and was put into law by the 18th Amendment to the US Constitution, which passed in 1919, and the Volstead Act, aka the National Prohibition Act, passing in 1920. The Volstead Act was named for Massachusetts Congressman Andrew Volstead, who campaigned for the act and was the chair of the House of Judiciary Committee. President Woodrow Wilson vetoed the act, but was outnumbered. Even the president was for it. Temperance committees across the US rejoiced. The Anti-Saloon League grossly miscalculated how much Congress would need to enforce prohibition, allocating a US $5 million a year, that's for the whole of the US, to enforce prohibition, and 1,500 prohibition agents were meant to stop millions of Americans from selling, manufacturing, distributing, and transporting intoxicating alcohol, which, as per the Act, is more than 0.5% alcohol per volume. In 1920, the government created the Bureau of Prohibition to enforce the Volstead Act, and former postal clerk Isidore, or Izzy, Einstein, jumped on board as revenue agent number one at a rate of $40 US per week. Izzy was born in approximately 1880 in the Austro-Hungarian Empire into a Jewish family and grew up speaking Yiddish, Hungarian, German and Polish, and emigrated to the US in 1901. It was mentioned to Izzy that he didn't look like a law enforcement agent, as he was overweight, short, and had no prior law enforcement experience. But Izzy argued that was to his advantage. The art of blending in and gaining the confidence of others, observation and deception. Besides, he could speak not only four languages, but he was passable in others. The perfect agent with a hidden agenda. Izzy wasn't wrong in his own assessments. One of the ways he would make an arrest was to visit a speakeasy, bang on the door, and the doorman would look through his peephole at Izzy, who told him that he was a revenue agent and he was needing a drink. The doorman thought Izzy was hilarious, bless him, and let him in, and Izzy made his arrests. Another example of an arrest was when Izzy entered a speakeasy, announced he was a revenue agent, and showed the barman his badge. The barman remarked how real it looked and asked where Izzy got it from. I love that one. Izzy replied, "I'll show you where," clapped him in handcuffs and marched him down to the station. A third example was when the Bureau asked Izzy to infiltrate a speakeasy that was particularly hard to crack by other revenue agents. Izzy turned up with another two revenue agents that looked the part, think Elliot Ness, and he ensured that he wasn't seen by the employees at the speakeasy, but the other two agents were. He then asked the agents to walk away a while as he entered the speakeasy and started up a conversation with the barman. The barman was suspicious, and as they walked away, the barman became more relaxed, telling Izzy that he knew the two men were revenuers and served Izzy a drink, who then promptly arrested him. Sneaky. Enter Izzy's friend, Mo Smith. Mo was born in New York City around 1887, looked like Izzy, and also had the ability to blend in and gain others' confidence. Mo, at the time of his employment with the Bureau, ran a cigar stand, and it's reported that they were brothers in the same Masonic lodge. They both began using disguises to infiltrate the illegal alcohol enterprises, cracking speakeasies and busting stills. They used wigs, fake facial hair, props, accents, languages, mannerisms, clothing, fake business cards to break into New York City's very large criminal base. They created jobs such as gravediggers, beauty pageant judge, that would have been interesting, Russian fishermen, Kentucky delegates to the Democratic National Convention, a rabbi, a Polish count, and personas for themselves, and even had inventions. One of these was the artificial gullet, where there was a tube inserted into a funnel sewn into Izzy's collar to use in a speakeasy. These places were so dark, it was easy for Izzy to give the illusion that he was drinking an alcoholic beverage, taking a sip and pouring the rest to be used as evidence into the funnel, and then arresting the barman and whoever else he could get. God, clever. The criminal syndicates of New York City were beginning to get to know the pair's schemes, and with every arrest came another write-up in the newspapers. This only increased their arrest rate as new schemes, personas, and disguises were being thought of and carried out on the unsuspecting, including one where Izzy went to a Brooklyn saloon wearing no disguise at all and was waiting for someone to recognize him, despite having a flyer on the wall detailing the pair's exploits and Izzy's photo. Izzy got tired of waiting and pulled out an arrest warrant, laughing at the look on people's faces. Gold. Another notable scheme was Izzy and Mo dressing up as tuxedoed violinists and sitting down at a Manhattan cabaret and asking the waiter for some real stuff. The waiter talked to the proprietor, who seemed to recognize them as musicians from a club down the street. He told the waiter to get them whatever drink they wanted and came over to tell them how much he liked their music and asked them to play some Strauss. Izzy replied, no, but he could play them the Revenue Agent's March, flashed his badge, giving the proprietor a heart attack on the spot. Ow. Section 6 of the Volstead Act allowed alcohol for medicinal or religious use, a loophole that the syndicates and bootleggers exploited. 10 gallons of kosher wine per Jewish family per annum were provided for religious use. In 1924, when Izzy found out that the Bureau had distributed, now wait for it, 2,944,764 gallons of wine, he smelled a rat. Mm-hmm. This led Izzy and Mo to arrest 180 rabbis, with one refusing to sell alcohol to the pair as they didn't look Jewish enough. They left, with Izzy coming back in disguise, arresting the rabbi and whipping off his disguise. A total of 4,932 arrests were made in Izzy and Mo's careers, and they enjoyed a conviction rate of, wait for it, 95%. Woo! Izzy played the clown to Mo's straight man, so they were a very successful pair. The record was, this is a good one, 71 raids in a little over 12 hours. Wow. The newspapers and radio loved Izzy and Mo. They provided human interest stories and would let the press know about their raids so they could get in on the scoop. They were Prohibition-era celebrities, and they never carried guns or shot a person nor got into any gunfights. Izzy and Mo had mixed feelings about Prohibition. They'd rather have had people who didn't break the law. However, it all came to a grinding halt when their superiors were getting sick of Izzy and Mo getting all the attention. After all, they were only two members of the Bureau of Prohibition, New York City branch, And they reprimanded Izzy, and I quote, "You get your name in the papers all the time and in the headlines too, whereas mine is hardly mentioned." Oh, sad face. That wasn't in it. "I need you to remember that you are merely a subordinate, not the whole show," end quote. In November 1925, Izzy and Mo were fired, and again I quote, "for the good of the service," with one official quipping that Izzy and Mo belonged on the vaudeville stage, not in dignified service to the US public. However, Izzy advised that he quit after the Bureau offered him a transfer to Chicago, which he declined, and then he quit the Bureau. The partnership of Izzy Einstein and Mo Smith was over. Another 36 agents were also fired that day from New York City, with the officials citing a reorganization plan. New Yorkers were bereft with the news, and Time magazine printed, and I quote, "Much delight as ever, the public looked on. Robin Hood was denied their adventures. Adventures as thrilling as those of Sir Lancelot, as those of Richard Coeur de Lion, as those of Don Quixote de la Mancha," end quote. Izzy and Mo had offers from Broadway, radio, and movie studios to indeed go on the stage, but they both declined, preferring to move into insurance sales, with Izzy moving to the New York Life Insurance Company, which provided more money and better sleep. Izzy especially thought this career move was a wonderful change, saying, and I quote, "What was good enough for ex-president Coolidge is good enough for ex-agent Izzy Einstein," end quote. Izzy published his autobiography in 1932 with the title Prohibition Agent Number 1, dedicating it to all the people he and Mo had arrested and died in 1938 at the age of 57. Mo died in 1960 in New York, and Time magazine had the following obituary, and I quote, "Died, Mo Smith, 73, who, with partner Izzy Einstein, formed the 1920s' funniest and most effective team of prohibition agents. Addicted to disguises, they posed variously as vegetable vendors, grave diggers, and Democratic National Convention delegates. Izzy and Mo arrested 4,000 suspected bootleggers, confiscated an estimated 5 million bottles of hooch of a stroke in Yonkers, New York," end quote. The Volstead Act became unenforceable, and Prohibition ended with the Cullen-Harrison Act being signed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, which amended the Volstead Act, permitting the manufacturing and sale of low-alcohol beer and wines. Ratification of the 21st Amendment was completed on December 5, 1933, which rescinded the Prohibition. Fellas, welcome to What the History.
Wow.
I love those two.
Those two are absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's really interesting that they became, like the quote said, the Robin Hoods.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, they didn't want people to break the law, but they had a duty and they fulfilled it, and then they got sacked for it.
Yeah, they knew their facts.
They did. They knew their facts.
They knew what was going on and what was real.
Yes.
They did indeed.
Is this your attempt at a segue?
It is.
May I say, Trevor, it's a bit of a poor example.
Well, yes,
but okay.
Distance between facts. Our
facts
topics today. Okay.
Alrighty. Let's get into it.
Move on.
Let's get into it.
Belief and understanding can be interesting concepts. People have a myriad of spiritual beliefs, and frankly, as long as they don't actually hurt anybody else, then good for them.
Yes.
Of course, our belief and understanding of the physical world around us, as proven by long-confirmed scientific investigation, could never be up for debate. Right? Right?
Right?
Oh, dear.
Sorry. Okay.
In ancient Egypt, it was considered absolute fact that the earth was flat, with the sun and the stars being provided by various antics of their deities. However, around 600 BCE, the pharaoh Necho II ordered a group of Phoenician sailors to take a daunting trip around the African continent. The exact reason for the trip is unknown, but it is suspected he wanted to find a way to attack the forces of the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar II, who was waging a war against Egypt. The trip didn't help with the war efforts. An unexpected development came from the observation of the sailors that the sun both rose and set in a different place as they had travelled further into uncharted territory, the first known account that indicated the world around. Unfortunately, the people, and the main source of this tale, Herodotus, dismissed their statements as being impossible.
Oh, Herodotus.
Vindication for the sailors wouldn't come until around 500 BCE when Pythagoras proposed a round earth. Admittedly, he didn't really use physical or scientific evidence. It was more based on aesthetics and the belief that a sphere was the most perfect shape. Most Greeks were happy with this explanation, but one took things a little further. In 240 BCE, the Greek philosopher and mathematician Eratosthenes decided to test these theories, many of which had been lost but are referenced in his works. He erected a pole at Alexandria and paid a willing participant to walk from Alexandria to Syene and report back the distance he travelled. Eratosthenes took this information, the angle of the shadow from the pole, and the general assumption at the time that the world was indeed round, and calculated the circumference of the world. He was pretty close in the grand scheme of things as well.
Well done, mate.
We'll fast forward to the 5th century CE, where there is strong evidence that the early Christian church was quite comfortable with the earth being a sphere, with only a very small percentage insisting that the Bible really proved the world as flat, and quite similar to the ancient Egyptian model as well. There is very strong evidence that even through the so-called Dark Ages, the majority were perfectly happy with the world being a globe. I am sure by now you're wondering what my point is. I am getting there, but I felt it was important to put together this summary to provide context to the real subject of this bizarre bit of history. In the early 1800s, a number of societies were being formed in England. These groups called themselves Zetetic, which can mean seeker or skeptic. Their skepticism was directed towards general scientific views, particularly about the shape of the earth. They held strong opinions about the literal interpretation of the Bible and firmly believed the earth was indeed flat. While there are early examples of this belief in the 18th century, these Zetetics are the first examples of what could be considered modern flat earthers. Yep, I'm totally going there, and it is pretty crazy.
Good luck, everyone.
One of the first major proponents of this view was Samuel Burley Rowbottom, a religious fundamentalist and the head of a Zetetic colony. He published under a number of pseudonyms and in 1849 published Earth, Not a Globe, where, amongst other things, he had proposed that light refracted along a curved path, which made sunrise and sunset optical illusions.
What's one hell of an illusion?
He also proposed the sun was 700 miles from Earth and had a diameter of 32 miles. Interesting, that last point is still popular amongst current flat Earth enthusiasts. After his death in 1884, his supporters formed the Universal Zetetic Society and published a journal called The Earth Not a Globe Review, which remained in circulation until after World War I.
Wow.
The idea of a flat Earth eased for a while, with various religious fringe groups and skeptics using it as the basis of beliefs, but not really getting much attention. But then along came Samuel Shenton, an English sign painter, who also claimed to be a fellow of the Royal Astronomical and Geographic Societies, who in 1956 took control of the remnants of the Universal Zetetic Society and renamed it the International Flat Earth Society, or IFES for short. In December of 1956, Shenton published a brochure, which in part stated, quote, The International Flat Earth Society has been established to prove by sound reasoning and factual evidence that the present accepted theory that the Earth is a globe spinning on its axis every 24 hours and at the same time describing an orbit around the sun at a speed of 66,000 miles per hour is contrary to all experience and to sound common sense.
Ooh.
End quote. He also added, a little erroneously, quote, in ancient times, the Earth was regarded as a plane. And this is expressed in all literature up to a few hundred years ago. The theory has fallen into disfavor only mainly to the dogmatism of modern science and popular education in schools, which leads to prejudice in favor of the globular theory from the start. He went on to express that the society intended to, quote, undo the harm that has been caused and hoped, again to quote, to hold regular meetings of the society. The IFES got a huge boost of publicity when a journalist showed Shenton photos of the Earth taken from space and asked him to comment on the roundness of the planet. His initial comment was, quote, it's easy to see how such a picture could fool the untrained eye, end quote. There were some reports that the photos may have had him reconsidering his position, but he finally declared the photos were fakes, created by scientists trying to cover up the true shape of the Earth in order to, quote, save face, end quote. When Shenton died in 1971, the leadership of the IFES was passed on to Charles K. Johnson, who resided in Lancaster, California. Johnson stated the society's aim was, quote, to carefully observe, think freely, rediscover forgotten fact, and oppose theoretical dogmatic assumptions to help establish the United States of the world on this flat earth. Replace the science religion with sanity. That was in all quotes, by the way, all caps.
Oh, wow.
End quote. He was also very clear on his opinion on scientists. Quote, we maintain that what is called science today and scientists consists of the same old gang of witch doctors, sorcerers, tellers of tales, the priest entertainers for the common people. Science consists of a weird, way-out occult concoction of gibberish theory theology, unrelated to the real world of facts, technology and inventions, tall buildings and fast cars, airplanes and other real and good things in life. End quote.
Whoa.
He went on to claim that the Society of Zetetics has existed for at least 6,000 years and had began with, quote, the creation of the creation, end quote.
Oh,
quite
bless
the claim.
Him. Oh, bless him.
I need to include one more quote as Australia gets a mention. And no, it's not about us Australians not existing, which I think could be a subject for its own episode. And I will use the emphasis provided by all caps and punctuation, so be warned. Quote, Australians do not hang by their feet under the world. This is a fact, not a theory, end quote. Now, you know what? I'm relieved about that. I couldn't imagine researching for what the history was hanging upside down.
Yeah, well, you're not a bat.
No. Johnson also took possession of the Society's collection of books on flat earth history, using them as a basis for establishing a newspaper called the International Flat Earth News, which declared in its masthead that it was, quote, restoring the world to sanity, end quote. Using the Bible as his evidence, Johnson declared the earth was indeed a flat disk. The North Pole was at the center and the circumference, the Antarctic region, was a wall of ice. Interestingly, the wall theory remains popular with the added belief that NASA guards the full circumference to prevent people climbing over and falling off.
It's just the mental picture on that.
Yeah. Johnson reinforced Rowbottom's claim that the sun was 32 miles wide and the moon was the same size and they were also both disks. His newspaper also had the claims that objects didn't accelerate downwards when dropped. Instead, it was caused by the movement of the Earth, which he claimed accelerated upwards at 32 feet per second squared. This also discounted gravity, instead claiming the Earth was being propelled by, quote, dark energy, end quote.
Is that like dark matter?
It's dark, whatever it is. Johnson also believed the United Nations unofficially supported the IFES. His reasoning? The inclusion of a flat Earth map on their logo. He said the UN was unable to officially endorse him because he also claimed that scientists were all involved in a cover-up to stop their space research from being discredited. Additionally, Johnson originated the idea that the moon landing was faked, being he said it was based on a script written by Arthur C. Clarke and was filmed in the Mojave Desert and on a soundstage where, quote, Neil Armstrong stepped on a paper moon, end quote. Johnson claimed that the IFES had over 1,600 members from all corners of the disc-shaped Earth. However, researchers believe this number would have been less than 100. It is known that Johnson died in 2001 in relative poverty at his home on the edge of the desert he claimed filled in for the moon. The IFES and the theory it represents has seen a resurgence thanks to the connectivity of the internet, often being represented by so-called free thinkers and minor celebrities. In January 2016, the rapper, B.O.B., took to Twitter espousing many of the theories proposed by Johnson and was widely criticized, including a fulsome response from Neil deGrasse Tyson. Things escalated when B.O.B. released a track called Fatline, claiming, quote, Neil Tyson needs to loosen up his vest. They'll probably write that man one hell of a check, end quote. It turned into a rap battle, with Tyson enlisting the help of his nephew, Stephen Tyson, to release Flat to Fact, which included the line, quote, I think it's very clear that Bobby didn't read enough and he's believing all this conspiracy theory stuff, end quote. Unfortunately, as a time of recording, I can't confirm if B.O.B. was convinced by, well, science. And I know how easy it is to laugh off flat earthers, but there is a serious side. With the rise of social media, there has been a resurgence of all sorts of conspiracy theories, which of course includes flat earth theory. Researchers believe the feeling of knowing the truth in uncertain times gives a sense of comfort. However, when conspiracy theorists are laughed at or shunned, they are most likely going to find groups that support them, deepening their beliefs rather than helping them get the information they need, and it can have deadly consequences. In February 2020, Mike Hughes, a flat earth believer, finally put into action his plan to prove his stance. He had spent the previous years working on a homemade rocket capable of launching himself into space so he could take his own photo of the flat disc below him. Despite many people trying to dissuade him, including fellow flat earthers, he launched himself on his fateful trip and traveled over 1,000 feet or 304 meters into the air before the rocket became a blur of black and crashed back into the ground. Hughes's death has not changed the stance of other flat earth proponents. All this shows is that no matter what the evidence or historical record, there will always be those who believe the wrong bits of what the history.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, that's why I said, like, at the top, I said, I don't care what people believe as long as it doesn't hurt anyone. Unfortunately, this has hurt people. This has split up families. This has ruined lives. So, this is not a belief I can cheerfully allow people to have and not really care about, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get serious at the end there, but.
Yes, people believe in all sorts of things. I think it's just, you know, what feels right for them as well. And, man, because if we didn't have photos of the Earth and things, would we also believe that the Earth was flat?
Oh, I mean, there's.
But, yeah, you look at the horizon.
You
can see it when you're flying in a plane. Oh, you remember that?
Oh, it's just like, you know,
and you can see it. You can see that there is a curvature.
Yep.
When you're flying.
Mathematicians, scientists, explorers, observers of all kinds for centuries have found the evidence and the observations and the support to support the theory. Well, not the theory, to support that the Earth is in fact a globe. Mm. And like I said, like, it was a flat Earth society that popularized the belief that everyone during the Dark Ages thought the world was flat, and that is not true. No,
that's definitely not true.
You know, the evidence is there to clearly show that all throughout that time period, you know, going back thousands of years, that yes, indeed, people largely understood the world was a globe.
Yeah, and I think I think also with the name the Dark Ages, they thought that people were not really enlightened and were, you know, living in the complete dark. I mean, literal dark.
Yeah, which is why I said so-called Dark Ages.
Yeah, that's, you know, it was a time of thinking and new theories.
Yes, indeed.
It was an interesting time period, actually.
Well, speaking of new things, we hope you've enjoyed this new episode of What the History.
Yeah, it's been really good.
It has been.
That was enjoyable. Just, you know, getting out there and, you know, this goes all over the world and our round world.
All around the world.
All around, and maybe even go to other planets. I don't know. Maybe they'll take our What the History to Jupiter. I don't know. But what I'm trying to say is it felt really good to get back out there. So thank you, everyone, for your patience and for your care.
Absolutely. And of course.
And your love.
And of course, if you want to know more about the bizarre bits of history we have discussed, all the references are down in that podcast description just down below, or you can head to rufusproject.com where you will find this episode and all our previous episodes. And of course, subscribe to What the History on your favorite podcast app of choice. We're on all of them.
Yes, we are. Yeah, we still are.
And for a little extra, including video content, early access to the podcast, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/TheRufus Project.
Yeah, you get the unedited version, so you can hear me flubbing my lines and saying the F word more than once.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but I didn't say it as many times as I usually do this time. No. Maybe I've become a bit more sedate in my old age. Fooljess! Well, I'm so not. But, yeah, you get to hear all sorts of stuff. You get to hear some guff. You get to hear some raving on.
That was actually a bit of a, I don't know, I think we flubbed more. I think we had minimal flubs.
Yes, we had minimal guff.
Indeed.
Which is weird.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of
Sorry About the Motorbike, Guys.
The History. We will be back as soon as we can.
We will be. We've got a few other things that we've written, and we're going to get back into it and give you all our What the History goodness.
We are trying to get back into a routine, essentially, but we're out here. So until next time. I can't remember how we end this anymore.
No, it is. We will be back
in the
upcoming future. with another piece of wonderful dialogue.
two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the History? Bye, everyone. Stay safe.
Flat Earth is a problem only when people in charge think that way. No law stops you from regressively basking in it.
He learned the game from Carl Sagan. You can never check him. You say the Earth is flat and then you try to disrespect him. I'm bringing facts to combat a silly theory, because B.O.B. has got to know the planet is a sphere. G. Whoa. Very important that I clear this up. You say that Neil's vest is what he needs to loosen up. What? And he's a Mason because the brothers get...